Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Let me ask you. I know you're a city resident. Where do you come in on the vote today, Prop 1 and 2?
I would love to tell you. I'm not allowed to by the paper at this point, or at least that's my understanding of what we have as a policy. I know that they're really on us not to kind of reveal too much about where we stand on certain issues, as far as, you know, staying unbiased and everything. Now, I'm not going to cover, I don't think, unless something really goes topsy-turvy today, I'm not going to cover it. So at least I can talk through it. You know, yeah, I live in the city. I'm happy to live in the city. I'm proud to live in the city. Don't take offense to this, Doug, but sometimes I grow tired of friends who live in the county telling me all about living in the city.
Yeah.
You know, there are things about living in the city. You know, I'm taking my kid to school. Obviously, I wish schools were better in the city. And there's crimes that have happened not too far from where I live. There was a shooting. I wish there were things better in the city. But I also recognize that throwing money to the city without knowing where said money is going is not always the best plan. And there's something very intriguing about knowing where money is headed and having it earmarked towards something. I also would really like to see a soccer team in St. Louis. I'm not going to hide that. Now I have to think about other ramifications and think about other concerns when it comes to these propositions. But I do see the bounce and do believe in the benefits of professional soccer in St. Louis.
I realize you're like Kirk Herbstreit when it comes to calling a game because of what the Post-Dispatch has asked you guys to do, and I totally understand where they're coming from with that. But in talking with compadres in the Tower Grove region, do you think that this will pass? Not saying you're yes or no on it, but do you think it will pass?
Right. Okay, so I have to understand I haven't been around for 50 days. So I have not had any conversation with my neighbors, except for one of them came up to me and said, welcome home.
Were the people in Jupiter, Florida saying about the stadium?
Yeah, people in Jupiter, right. Florida. That's a good question, Doug.
Thank you.
In Jupiter, Florida were saying, St. Louis, is that the place with the arch?
No.
And I said, imagine if we had a soccer team. Then you'd be like, St. Louis, is that the place with the arch and the soccer team?
Right.
No, I'm joking. No, I mean, the folks that I've talked to, I kid you not, they're split 50-50 on this. I think the thing that I hear most is that there's a real big interest and understanding in what a professional soccer team, what hole that could fill, what entertainment value that could bring, what a stadium could do. There's a real hesitation in funding stadiums. There's almost like this allergy to public money for large enterprises like that because of the supercharged political election that we just got through, where you had a lot of red meat for the masses thrown out there in buzzwords, which were never explained. I mean, look at, I think that, you know, the governor when he was just the governor-elect and his what was it, welfare for millionaires phrase that he threw out there. I think it had no tether to reality, but it made for a very nice soundbite. And I think that still echoes. I still hear that from people. And it's not that they buy into it. I talk with folks who are curious, who do research into this, that do read. And it's not that they totally buy into it. It's just that they can't quite get over it. And I think that's a stumbling block. I have no idea. I kid you not, guys. It is probably for every one person I talk to that is caught up in the soccer euphoria or caught up in the idea that this could revitalize downtown or really add an endpoint to the revitalization of that archway corridor. You know, there's somebody else who just gets hung up on we shouldn't be building stadiums with tax money.
Yeah, my concern, and I know the opponents will point to the dome and say, look what we did there. It's sitting empty. It might sit empty forever, still paying on it. So let's not ever do any major projects anymore for the city. Because
Comic-Con's coming to the dome, Doug. I don't think it's empty.
Well,
no, brother.
It'll be mostly empty, even for that.
Am I allowed to talk about life in the city because I did live there for a long time?
It's not that one's allowed to. It's just, you know, like, can I give you a quick example, Kat?
We're not taking examples right now, Derek.
Yes,
I'm taking them. I'm taking them all over my chest.
We're taking examples, Derek.
Oh, no, this is a brief one. It's like, it's folks go, okay, hey, you know, you want to spend tax dollars for a stadium. Why don't, you know, you and the city actually take some ownership and spend tax dollars on police and schooling and improving the infrastructure? It's like, yeah, okay, yes, we would like to do that. But it's not an if-then situation. It's a, we know that this tax will go to a stadium. We are aware of that. If we vote yes for 1 and 2, we know where that tax money is going to go. Now, if there's an alternative that, hey, we were going to raise this tax money and it's going to go directly to these things, that's great, but it's not. And, you know, we would all like to see infrastructure to our various wards. Or improvement to our various wards. I live in an area where it would be great to have more businesses come in. We had a St. Louis Bread Company pull up and leave. It would be nice to see things. We have a pizza place coming in. That's great to see. Now, what is doing that? What is spurring that? You know, is almost peripheral to this. And so when I'm thrown, you know, this argument like, why don't you guys use tax dollars for something that actually improves people's lives? Well, this would improve people's lives. Oh, and by the way, the folks in the county would also benefit if, you know, there was a stadium here and not carry some of the tax burden. And that frustrates me. So there's the example.
You know, having lived in the city, maybe I'm jaded, and there were a lot of good things about it. But when you have a kid, and in terms of education, we thought it was best to leave the city. Mm-hmm. But I always felt like with things like this, where, and as you say, it's not either or, like, this is something totally different. And if there were somehow I think the funds would get misappropriated anyway, and it wouldn't
right.
be better. I always feel like, okay, say no to that, because if we did this, it would be better over here, and you would never get to that point where things were better over there anyway. So go
right.
ahead and put the money into a soccer stadium. That can at least help.
It is a false argument when there's not that choice. If on the ballot it said, we're going to raise taxes and $60 million is going to go to schools and, you know, neighborhood watch programs and, you know, tax rebates for businesses. If we had that and it said, or $60 million is going to go to the stadium, then it'd be a different vote. But I think you said it well, Kat. It's very valuable to know where the money is going, to have a say in directly where that money's going.
And do we know for sure that they've left it wide open, that we don't know where the money's going if it passes? I mean, it's mostly a use tax, right? That's where it's coming from. It's going to come directly from the people using the stadium.
No, a use tax has to do on goods coming in as well.
Yeah, on certain businesses in the city.
That's right.
So I think for the most part, we do know where the money's going to go if these propositions pass, right?
Right. That's our point. That's what Kat and I are saying, is that you know where the money's going to go this time. It's not that you have an alternative choice.
Right. So if people vote yes, they know that this is not money that's just going to be floated out there, and some politician's going to be able to decide where it goes somewhere
exactly.
down the road. You know where it's going to go.
Exactly.
And it's not.
I think that's what Kat, are we on the same page here? That's what we're saying.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's basically not coming out of your pocket unless you go to the games.
No, I mean, look, we know how tax works, and it can be. I'm failing here at 8 o'clock in the morning or before 8 o'clock in the morning, or what the exact description is, but, you know, from, what was it, Guns and Butter, McKernan?
Guns and Butter, Walter Johnson, mm-hmm. Doug, macroeconomics.
All right, so tax is a trickle-down expense, right, where it affects people who make less income more. And one of the ways it does that, Doug, is that if you have a use tax or you have some of these sales taxes that put a pinch on business, it's not that business shoulders the entire burden of it. They don't just say, oh, well, more taxes on us. Too bad. They raise prices of goods. And it's when you see the price raise of goods that that's where it pinches people. So it's not entirely that it's, well, it's no more money out of our pocket. Eventually, it will be. The other part of it that I think is interesting is that you have the STL group, the STL soccer group. They are not fighting the ticket tax, which, you know, which the Blues for a long time said was a problem. The Cardinals have never had as a problem. They are going to have that ticket tax on there. And so you are going to see an added expense going to a soccer game than, say, you would going to the other professional sports in town.
Right, but at least the people going are the ones paying for it.
The people going are the ones paying that tax, or would be paying that burden, yes. But
right.
The other one would be shared.
Right.
Well, I like soccer, so I'm for it.
I do like soccer, yeah. Man. We had a little FIFA game this morning at our house.
Oh, really? Wow, it's an early game. It's an early start.
Too early.
Yeah, no, we had a 6:35 start time. Yep, first kick.
Wow.
Can I ask you a personal question?
Always.
Okay. It's the scarf thing that I just don't see, and I won't wear a scarf, though I will support the
team.
Are
we on the air?
Yeah.
Personal question on the air?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I can't see myself wearing a scarf. I won't wear a scarf. I'll root for the team and be like a rights holder for them, but I'm not wearing a scarf.
Are what about you, a road kilt?
Are you not a road kit,
kilt?
Not a kilt either.
You would wear a kilt.
Are you okay wearing scarves? Is that part of that flavor that you're looking forward to?
In the winter, I really like scarves. I enjoy them quite a bit. And I have since I was a kid. I think that if we're asking personal questions, I'll give you a personal revelation here. I think that probably comes from Doctor Who, that Tom Baker wore a very long scarf.
Oh, for crying out loud.
Tommy Baker.
Oh, brother.
I liked wearing scarves.
I opened a can of worms
here. Is that okay to admit here on your sports?
If there's
program?
One show where, well, you said sports, but if there's one program where it's comfortable to admit something, Doug, like that, it's right here.
I guess.
Right. Okay. Good. But a soccer scarf, no, Kat. I don't see myself wearing one.
All right.
Doug is not pro scarf.
Good. Not really. No.
Tim just goes with whatever accessorizes an outfit properly.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
because you're
right.
Fashion minded.
You like cats?
Ball caps.
Oh, ball caps.
Ball caps.
Derek Gould, our guest here. We're talking about the Prop 1, Prop 2 vote. I just had a friend of mine, Doug, Joe Stats. You know Joe Stats, don't you? He loves America.
Mm-hmm.
He texted me, just voted at my polling place, far fewer people than when I voted at the same place in the primary. Well, that's going to be standard.
Yeah.
Last time we had this general in 2013, it was 12.5% voter turnout, just to give you an idea. 200,000 registered city voters,
mm-hmm.
approximately 12.5% voter turnout. To the Cardinals and back at it this evening as the schedule starts to get a little more real. They'll have a day off on Thursday before the Reds come to town. But with Adam Wainwright taking the mound tonight, it does seem like he is on a quest of sorts. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it will lead to success, but it does seem like he is on a quest of sorts. It's one of the articles this morning in the Post-Dispatch and online on stltoday.com about how he wants to prove that he is not on his decline. What is your read on proper expectations for Wainwright in 2017 as we see him make his season debut?
That's a great question.
Good job, Tim.
Thank you.
Danny Schwartz Insurance Agency right there in Columbia, Illinois.
It's a Lemmings gong, just so you know, Gouldsy.
Okay, got it. I think
it's a dumb show.
Yeah, they caught me off guard, but well done. I think, you know, is he going to – I think you expect 200-plus innings from him. I think you expect the quality starts cranking out. I think you expect that ERA to be, you know, in the threes. Probably even a run better than last year's 4-6. I think that's where you expect him to be. I think when you look at the Cardinals' rotation, if Adam Wainwright has the third best ERA and the third most innings, and he won't be very happy with that, he won't settle for that. But if that's where things end, where somebody or two guys have more innings than him, maybe even one guy has more innings than him, two guys have better ERAs than him, and, you know, one or two. I think if he goes out there and he's third in a lot of categories, that's exactly the kind of season the Cardinals need from him. That, like I said, is not the season that he expects from himself. The, you know, what Cardinals need and what he expects are different. I think what he expects for himself is to be about 2013. You know, that year that he had there when he was feeling both healthy but also, you know, just had a command of his pitches. It was about that time that he told me that, you know, when he's pitching well, and he reiterated this the other day when we talked about how he just has this focus where he's not hearing anything else going on in the game, but it's kind of a symphony that washes over him. And he's got a feel for his, you know, curveball like a conductor has his feel for his percussion. He has a feel for his, you know, cutter and his fastball like a conductor has a feel for the first and second violins. And he's got a feel for the changeup now that would, you know, be a feel for the brass section, that kind of thing. And he wants to get back to that point, which he feels he kind of had peak Waino in 2013.
I'm hoping he has a solid season. Here's why. Not just because that would help the Cardinals, and that would be good for everyone in St. Louis, kind of like building a soccer stadium. But he's such a nice guy. I mean, you don't have to read much to know that Adam Wainwright is a solid guy. And I felt it was torture for him last year after a good start, maybe two, and then he would backslide trying to find an explanation. My heart went out from, I don't want to see that again this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was clear during the season how much frustration he was having. I mean, just even going back to the middle of the season, he and I sat in Arizona and talked, and he was describing how he just felt like every pitch he was throwing was like 4, 5, 6 inches off. And if he tried to throw a curveball, and he felt like he was throwing it in the dirt, and instead there it was hanging over the plate. And he just was such a foreign feel for him. He just had no feel. I mean, the other day he listed, he goes, my curveball was awful, my fastball was awful, my cutter was, oh, terrible. Terrible was the word he used. It was terrible. And he goes, I did okay for 4 terrible pitches. And he kind of sometimes, or not kind of, he definitely, you know, is self-deprecating. And beneath that statement, there simmers this real clear frustration as to what happened last year, and he's really eager to trash it. He said multiple things. He poked a lot of jabs at himself for last season, and then would just as quickly say, look, you cannot wait to trash it, put it away, and move one more start past it, 2 more starts past it. And that's essentially what he's going to, you know, he wants to do this season is, you know, quality start and a win puts him that much further away from last year. 3 quality starts and 3 wins puts him that much further away from last year. A 2 ERA in April puts him that much further away from last year. And that's really valuable to him and obviously to the team.
And they face Jake Arrieta tonight, a guy they've not had much success against in the past.
Playoffs.
Yeah, yeah. Did he look like maybe he started to be human again towards the end of last year? Did he have a good spring? What are you expecting from Arrieta? Is he still one of the premier guys in baseball?
Yeah, I expect a monstrous year from Jake Arrieta. He's, you know, the innings total and how he carried that 2015 team caught up with him. I know that comes not as a surprise at all to Cardinal fans who have seen their starters do such a thing. You know, I mean, he, I was talking to Matt Carpenter during spring, and he said he compared Arrieta to Chris Carpenter and said that, you know, that Jake Arrieta is the Cubs version of Chris Carpenter, where it just happened to be the Cubs that gave him a chance to get right, to get well, and then to take off, just like the Cardinals did, you know, what, 15 years ago, almost 15 years ago now for Chris Carpenter. And that it was the Cubs that benefited from taking that chance, and it was Arrieta who then led them to the playoffs and led them to that win in the wild card game against the Pirates. It was an incredible game, but that took a toll, especially for a guy who had never done work like that. And you saw some of the fraying last season. Now you have a guy who is on the verge of free agency, very, you know, whatever motivation you think that provides. The same is true for him and for Lynn. And, you know, I think you're going to see a dynamic Arrieta. Probably he'll reassert himself as, when I look at the Cubs pitching, he is not the question. Every other pitcher is on that staff for me, but he's not. He's the bulwark. He's the guy who is going to have a tremendous season. And if the Cubs, who we think they are, he's going to end probably in that top five for Cy Young voting.
Derek Gould with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Derek, we appreciate it. Enjoy the discussion on the soccer stadium and, of course, the Cardinals. Thanks so much, sir.
All right, guys. Thank you for being patient with me as we work through it.
Thank you, Derek.
All right, Gould.